Welcome to this week's Dude Therapist episode. I am so honored to have this power couple, the Freemans. They are authors of The New Power Couple and The Argument Hangover, which hits the shelves February 2021 and already hit number one new releases. With much excitement, they founded and launched Empowered Couple University, an online university where busy couples unlearn unhealthy patterns and gain modern relationship skills. They are sought-after relationship coaches and have worked with celebrity couples, public figures, and thousands of couples around the world. They have shared the stage with Tony Robbins, were nominated as Arizona's 40 Under 40 Influencers, and have been featured in national media for teaching couples modern, practical skills and tools to work together through any life challenge, reaching over 809,000 people around the world. Jocelyn and Aaron Freeman have led over 42 sold-out live events for couples in Arizona and host one of the top relationship podcasts on iTunes. They are passionate about training and leading future relationship coaches and have an accredited coaching certification program. Jocelyn and Aaron Freeman are ordained, and their vision is to make relationship development the new personal development and to lower the divorce rate in their lifetime. I am so excited to have this power couple. Let's get right into it. Welcome to this week's episode of The Dude Therapist. I have Aaron and Jocelyn Freeman, or the Freemans, who are relationship experts, joining us on the podcast. You know, you all know that season two is about relationships with ourselves, with others, and each other. And I think it was really opportune to get this amazing couple on to really talk about relationships and how to optimize ourselves and our partners or spouses. So can you introduce yourself, Freemans, who you are, what you're doing, how you came to be where you are today?
Well,
yeah. Hello. First of all, thanks for having us on.
I want to start off with just like an unconventional, rather than starting with like, you know, here's the reasons we're cool. I want to start off with like, we really came from two completely different upbringings. We witnessed different things in our parents' marriage, and that really started to show up when we were first dating. And so I think who we are is two people who have done the work. We have transformed our beliefs and our patterns around relationships. His being like shut down and don't, you know, embrace conflict at all, because he didn't see his parents ever disagree. And for me, it was watching my parents go through a very intense, dramatic, painful divorce, yell all the outward projection of emotion. And so we have done the work, and now we are honored and grateful to empower couples with the relationship skills to also do the work, to unlearn patterns that they learned and relearn new skills. And so we've been doing that, and we have all the things, you know, the couples workshop, our book. But again, I want to just keep it really authentic and genuine about what drives us in the work.
You know, I love that you brought it that way, to being honest and raw, because one of the things that I try to do on Elevation and on the podcast is be honest, because I think people see that you have a book, you have a great Instagram account, you have a website, The Power Couple, right? Which is the name of your book, which I love that name. And we'll talk about that soon, that you have it all together. But it doesn't mean you didn't come from struggle to make you who you are. So it's very important to be authentic. Something I've been trying to talk a lot about is that when I got married to my wife, we did a kind of cute thing where we did something called an import-export list, where we sat with ourselves as a couple and said, okay, what do you have from your family you want to import? And what do you have from your family that you want to export?
Nice.
No judgment. You know, what happened in your family doesn't mean it's right for us. And what happened in your family doesn't mean it's bad for us. But that's what I'm hearing from you guys, that you guys came from two different backgrounds, two different styles, saw two different ways of parenting and relationships, and said, okay, let's do the work. What's best for us as a couple? How was that conversation go down for you guys, coming from such different extremes, to create that couple?
That is smart. And I do want to just put out there for all of us human beings and those of us that are in relationship, and especially for parents, it's really not that there is what I would say is a good upbringing or a bad upbringing, right? Because from the perspective, Jocelyn might have had more challenging, more difficult upbringing, where mine was smoother, it was based in faith, my parents were always there. But it's not really about that, because we as individuals and behaviorally, what do? We give meaning to the things that we see. So as a parent, you can't control what meaning your kids are going to give to anything. whether you had the best intent or not. And I don't know if my dad walking out of the room and avoiding conflict, I don't know the experience that was for my mom. Maybe that was good. All I know is by me modeling that did not work for Jocelyn. Mm. You know, we don't think it really works for any relationship because me shutting down, though I'm not reacting outwardly, which seems like a benefit, I'm not yelling, I'm not raising my voice, but to withdraw myself, it has her feel isolated, shut out. And our whole premise is, are you doing things consciously that bring you together or separate you? Mm-hmm. And me shutting down, though maybe that did work for my mom. To answer your question, I realized early on by me modeling that, it had us be more separate. And so our goal for romantic relationships and all relationships, are you consciously communicating in ways that bring you together or separate?
Yeah. And if I could jump in as well, because I love the import export thing. And there's an interesting section in our book where we talk about how, you know, we learn from society the questions to ask when dating. What do you like to do? What are your hobbies? What are your goals? Do you want kids? All those things. And those are important, of course. Yeah. Like, you want to be compatible in those regards. However, we've never talked to a couple, or maybe not never, very rarely, less than 0.5% have talked about, okay, when challenges come up in a relationship, how will you act? Mm. When you get triggered, will you take it out on me or will you own your triggers? Like, asking those deeper questions. And so we have multiple exercises where couples can actually create a plan. Like, what is our plan for conflict? What is our commitment to communication? And it's interesting that people will create a business plan, but they won't create a relationship plan.
I love that. And I like that you, I like, Aaron, that you kind of broke that down, because you're right. There is no good or bad. It's how we perceive it. So for what might have been considered a quote unquote, big air quotes there, good parenting, that not seeing the conflict doesn't mean it was best for your parents or truly a great model for you as a kid watching your parents either not argue or, in Jocelyn's case, argue and have a very struggling divorce. But doesn't mean good or bad. It's just how we perceive that, because in the end, we then internalize that, like you said, behaviorally, we internalize it cognitively, and that impacts our relationships going forward, which then we don't even know consciously that sometimes we're doing it. You know, recently I've been reading a lot of different books, and the theory that keeps coming up is attachment theory. In all these like psychology books, whether it's Jonathan Haidt's book of Righteous Mind or The Happiness Hypothesis, as a social psychologist, he keeps throwing in attachment theory. For all those who don't know, there's a theory by Haslow and Bowlby who talked about the idea of attachment theory and how our parenting styles could impact our children, whether it's avoidant, secure, and insecure attachment, or nervous attachment. And those things you sometimes don't realize until you look deeper, but how a parenting style could impact a child's future relationships. No pressure, no pressure to all the parents out there listening, right? But, you know, as experts that you guys are, coming from different backgrounds, what do you feel? I know you touched upon it, Aaron, a little bit. Are some of the maybe key pillars of a healthy relationship? And you said it's consciousness, right? What are some other things that you feel are those like things that can really help someone build a base or a nice strong pillar for a healthy relationship?
Yeah, it's such a great question. It's really the question that drove our newest book here that hits shelves in February, The Argument Hangover. The premise is, just like you said, we have all made up a lot of meaning that conflict is bad. Mm-hmm. So that being the case, we try to avoid it because it looks like on the outside, well, I don't see a lot of other people posting about their conflicts. I don't see anybody talking about it. Don't talk about it with friends, so that must be bad. So if it's happening to me, it shouldn't be. So our main premise, and to your point of what is one of the foundational pillars, is that conflict is not bad, so it's also not something to avoid. It's actually the place that is a signal to you to be able to go deeper. If you lean into the conversation and you have the right communication skills to seek to understand, that is the place that you know your partner on a deeper level. And also, whenever you face challenges, like imagine being on a basketball team, right? It's like when you get into a tough game, you face a challenge and you come out of that, what happens to the team? You build your bonds together. And in a relationship, it is the same, but we usually take it too personal to stay in it and to say, let's face this challenge together and come out the other side with a stronger bond. So we want to change that paradigm, and conflict is a good thing. If you lean into it, it creates more understanding and connection.
I love that. I think, you know, now that you're talking about that so openly, it has brought, you know, meaning, you know, and kind of triggered my thought process that my wife and I got deeper into our relationship when we had that conflict, because it helped us understand each other and our needs. So when someone was triggered, or someone had an argument, or it caused an argument, and made us really talk about things that are bothering us, bringing it to the forefront instead of either hiding it or avoiding it, it made us kind of understand, where are you coming from? What do you mean when you say those things? Because sometimes we use language. Let's say it's good, bad. We use parenting, husband, wife. We use all these words that mean one thing for one, and the other person might be on a different wavelength of what that word might mean. And you need to kind of communicate where you're at. And I love that you said that, because we are so afraid of arguing. We're so afraid of conflict. We're so afraid, you know, I don't know if you've had this, but a lot of couples that I've talked to, the first argument, that's it, we're getting a divorce. That's it. We had an argument. My mom told me that. She said when she got married, when they got married, my parents got married and they had their first real argument, she cried because she thought, I never saw my parents argue in front of me. The fact that we're arguing means that something's wrong. We're going to get a divorce.
Can I jump in on that?
Yeah,
because
go for it.
It's something I'm so passionate about. And I think we even have another book in us, is about fantasy love versus true healthy love. And we are shown this depiction in movies, TV. I mean, look at what people are watching, and they highlight the falling in love part and all the good things and the chemistry. And then what do we mostly see depictions of? Challenges happen and they end up breaking up. We don't see a ton of depictions of a challenge happening and they work through it together and they learn new things. And so we're unconsciously programmed to either hide our challenges from people because there's shame and guilt and something's wrong. And so then they kind of suppress themselves in the relationship and kind of start surviving. Or they say, oh, this means something's wrong with us. What if instead it was, okay, in true love, there are still challenges that come up, because relationships mirror things to us. They reveal things, and you can heal a lot in a relationship, things we didn't heal from our upbringing. So I could go so much longer into this, but in true love, it's embracing challenges to see that there is a positive growth experience that can come from it.
I think that's so important that you said that, because when it comes to the Hollywood world, whether it's Disney, which I love Disney and Pixar.
Right.
You know, I grew up on that. I love The Lion King. I love Beauty and the Beast. And I know, I don't know why I picked those two. there are so many other. Frozen, let's go a new one. And in the end, Hollywood, I think the only thing that I've seen in Hollywood, whether it's that new movie with Scarlett Johansson and Adam Driver, I forgot what it's called.
Yeah, we talk about that too.
Right? There's so much tension and frustration, and the lawyers getting involved, but they never show the coming together. And also then you have, let's say, for example, like The Notebook, where like they never communicated. And then all of a sudden they, you know, they're sitting at their old age.
Right,
that's
right.
Only when they come together. But there are so many years of angst, and like they got into an argument and they left, or whatever the story is. Classic movie to watch in high school. But in the end, as a couple, I work with couples all the time as a therapist. And one of the biggest things I start off with is, if you want the help, I'm here to help. And if you don't, I can't. Because you need to want to fix and work on this. Like you said in the beginning, this is work. It's a struggle. It's two complex, layered human beings coming together. And you have your beliefs, your systems, your past, and the other person has their own stuff as well. And it doesn't make them bad, ugly, terrible. It makes them human. And there are a lot of things that are unhealthy in relationships. Can you talk about, because you said, you know, if you want to work on it and do those things, what are some things that really maybe are a danger zone or red flags where it isn't important or isn't healthy to fight for? What are some of those things that you've seen?
Well, it's great. We have, I think chapter 3 goes into some of the myths around this, whether it's like not rocking the boat for one that I was thinking
of. Yeah, kind of suppress, withhold. You know, I'm going to avoid this. But when you suppress or avoid, you know, the challenging communications, it builds into resentment. So a big red flag is actually a long period of time of withholding something, and it brews and it becomes more and more real for you. And then it comes out later as a huge rift.
Yeah, there's a certain dynamic in relationships called avoidance. And avoidance is this tendency to minimize or reluctance to deal with issues directly. And here, this is a big thing. If you're constantly avoiding, you probably, number one, have too short term of a view of the conflict. Because yes, it seems like if I avoid, then I don't have tension. We don't have a disagreement in the short term, but you have to expand. I think this is one of the things, is to look further beyond in the timeline, expand your view. In the short term, okay, maybe you avoid some short conflict, but you're only adding to resentment. There's another principle about when you withhold something, all your brain can then do is start to make up a story. It's going to project a reality onto your partner. Eventually, from a short withholding, you're going to start to think, they don't want to hear what I have to say anyway. Mm-hmm. You know what? They don't care. They don't ever ask me. I don't get to make a lot of decisions. They just do it themselves. Mm-hmm. So you're literally putting on a backpack of resentment, putting weights in there that are only weighing you down and becoming what would seem like more significant later on. So avoiding, though, in the short term, maybe you call it a benefit, but it's really not, because it's doing more damage in the long term.
To slightly add on to that, because we said earlier, the goal is not to avoid conflict, that conflict, when you learn how to have healthy, can be constructive. Here's what we see as damaging around conflict, is letting there be a prolonged period of time after the argument until you reconnect. That's what we call the argument hangover. And so that ego inside of us can keep us from initiating reconciliation. Mm-hmm. So we see the biggest rifts get created in relationships when they let that disconnection period last too long. It, in a way, kind of disintegrates trust. It disintegrates the bond. It really threatens that, in, you know, that primal fear of like not being accepted and loved. Mm-hmm. So we always say, focus on shortening that argument hangover period and reconnect faster.
Is there a research behind a time frame that's like a successful versus unsuccessful that can cause that?
We have found that it's not so much about time frame, other than we would really have people ask, like, how much life are you willing to give up being disconnected? Of course, I think that it's great if it's maximum days. If only if that's been huge and escalated and you need to actually reflect more. For us, it's less about the time and it's more so about the steps. Like, what actually do you do to get complete? Because most people just say, I'm sorry. And then they're like, let's just get back to life. Mm-hmm. And it's really just lingering. And maybe there's still some thoughts and wondering, like, wow, that really hurt me when you said that. Is any part of that true? And so then they just have it kind of beneath the surface and it starts piling up and it's there for later. It just is going to sneak up on you later on. So it's more so about what you do during that repair that is the most important.
I love that.
Yeah, I was going to add one quick thing. There's another book, I'm forgetting the title, but it talks about how to create intimate relationships. And there's something like 10 or 12 steps. So the summary is like, and this is with anybody, so I think this will make a difference for all the audience here. If you go from not knowing anybody, there's a certain steps you have to go through, right? There's like eye to body, right? Like, you have to see them. Then you go like eye to eye, you make eye contact. Then it's like hand to body, like you do a handshake, right? You might go hand to back, like a hug, right? So there's literally steps you go through, and that's required to build an intimate relationship. And when you skip steps, that's when it seems weird, right? Like, if that's when people feel weird. If you didn't know anybody and immediately you hug them, that's why a lot of people feel weird. So building relationships is not about time. It is about going through the appropriate steps. And we actually hadn't said this before. Restoring conflict, once again, isn't about your time. It's about getting through the steps. And if you got through the steps in 5 minutes, great. If you got through the steps in a day or a week, you know, that's still fine. We just say, are you communicating about the steps that you're in? And we actually have the 5 R's to repair from a conflict in the book. So that's really the steps we're referring to as well.
Yeah, I think that's so important, because sometimes it is about giving the person time to process and work through it. And sometimes if it goes too long, then it creates this atmosphere of rumination and overthinking and diving so deep into this spiral of the what if and the worry of a relationship, that sometimes it's harder to get back into those healthy thought process and steps to then build the relationship back up. And, you know, I want to make it very clear, and you can disagree or agree if you'd like, we're not talking about abusive relationships here,
of course,
or truly unhealthy physical, sexual, emotional abuse. That's not what we're talking about here. That is, of course, a no-no and something that you need to get out and get help with. We're talking about a regular, healthy relationship that has ups and downs of normal life. Because I think, you know, I want to make sure we put that out there to begin with. Oh, what about my abusive relationship? I don't want the haters to come out and start yelling at each other. But it's really for a healthy, basic relationship. What then does that healthy conflict, how do you communicate that conflict? If it's in your book and you want to give a little teaser so that, you know, of course, people should buy it. But what are maybe some basic tips on how to kind of start that conversation when conflict has happened so that communication is built on a successful base and not something that's built on something that's going to cause another argument?
Yeah. So we really have three stages of conflict. There's before the conflict, during the conflict, and post-conflict. And so we have strategies for all three stages. What you just asked is in that post-conflict. So it's already happened. Okay. Whatever it was about. Now, the goal is to reconnect faster. So the five R's, to just briefly go over them, and of course, you know, we're going shorter here, but there is first reflect. And this step is often stepped over because why? You just want to get past it. So you just want to say, I'm sorry. And can't we get back to our weekend? But in the reflection period, you're looking for, you know, maybe what did trigger this? Like, is this maybe something I could look at more? Like, is there something for me to acknowledge about my patterns? Is there a need that I haven't expressed? Is this something we've been neglecting? So reflect, like, is there a deeper purpose? Of course, we're not saying like if it's about the toilet paper, but also even little things like you may go, oh, but it was just about the dishes. Does that really matter? But here's the thing. It's not about the dishes. Mm-hmm. It's about some need or feeling that wasn't met. Yeah. And it's probably linked to other things that haven't been acknowledged. So anyway, long story short, reflect is the first step. The second is to take responsibility. You have to take responsibility for your part. Even if you think your partner started it or it was their problem that created the disagreement, you were part of it. They didn't have an argument with themselves.
Yes.
So how were you a part of it? Was it a certain behavior that you exuded during the disagreement? Even shutting down. You know, shutting down can still be damaging.
If you're really committed to repairing and having a healthy relationship, you don't just look for if you had responsibility, you look for where you can take responsibility. And like Jocelyn said, it might not be that you caused it or initiated it, but was there something you said that kept it going? Was there something you didn't say that ended up escalating it? Was a tone of voice? Like really look for yourself where you have responsibility. And by doing that, now this is where you can come back with your partner. And the third stage is reconnect. Now I'll let you go further, but the literal transition into reconnecting, you get back physically with them. And what you want to start with is where I see I can take responsibility is, and fill in the blank. Now, the thing that we all have a hold up on is I could totally get over this. All you have to do is admit where you were wrong and we could be past this. Everyone wants the other person to admit first. But look, if you are committed to a relationship, being a leader, whether romantic or any relationship, if you first start with where you see your responsibility, that gets you back reconnected. Now, we also know from a few psychology principles, you have reciprocity and you have mirror neurons, right? So we won't go further, but essentially by doing that, your other person or your partner will usually follow and say, well, thank you so much for saying that. I actually see where I have responsibility too.
And what's tricky about the reconnect stage, because it's also important to make some kind of a physical gesture to just say, I love you. And so sometimes for me, it is a little bit harder for me to want to get to a place of wanting to connect physically. It takes me a little bit longer. Like I need a couple hours to maybe go on a walk or something like that. But what I'll do is I'll just make some small gesture, just touch the shoulder. I do want to reconnect with you. I'm not ready now, but I love you. A touch of the shoulder, just a quick little note to just say, I still love you. I'm going to come back to this. So we kind of have to set aside that part of us that wants to stay distant.
Yeah.
So that's that reconnect. Then there is remind. Remind each other of your agreements for times of conflict and what you're committed to. Now, some of you listening go, well, we don't have agreements for times of conflict. Great. So that's what you want to do.
Time to make them.
Yeah. And that it's really powerful to have like, what are just like a boxing match. They know what's okay and not okay. And so you want to actually have those agreements. And we have a process for that in the book. It's a little bit longer to go into here. So that's reminding each other of the agreements and your commitment in the relationship. And then is lastly, reconciliation, which is basically as a couple, reconciling the conflict into an opportunity. How was this a benefit to us? What did we learn here? How are we a stronger and better team now? Because, and you kind of mentioned this earlier, it's all about perception. So if you leave that conflict seeing it as a bad thing or something that ruined your weekend, you're not going to have a fond memory around it. And it's going to even kind of create resistance to having them come up again. Mm-hmm. But if you reconcile it as, wow, okay, we both learned something new about each other. We're more bonded and connected. It just changes the way you remember it, which is really important.
I love those five things. I was writing notes because I have so many questions, not so many, a few ideas. You know, the reminder thing reminds me of like that Grey's Anatomy episode where they have the sticky note on the back in their room. Right. Where they always refer to when they get into an argument, sticky note. The sticky note was their commitment to we love each other and we're there for each other. And I have found as a couples therapist that sometimes it's a word, a trigger word or a cue word to remind themselves, what are we here for? What are we here for? So it's like it could be something cute. Doesn't have to be serious. It could be a stupid, funny word that reminds each other. Remind yourself what we're here for. Let's be together. We're a team. We're here for the bigger picture. It doesn't mean you don't have the conversation behind the word. You can't just make up a word that means absolutely nothing. You have to have a conversation about what that means. And another thing I was writing down was that that responsibility part, I think, is so key. I work with so many couples who point fingers and consistently through our session, they did this and that did this and they did this and who did what. And it's all this, he said, she said, she said, she said, he said, he said, no matter the combination of the couple. And I keep telling them it's a two-way street. It takes two to tango. Right? You can't just have one person arguing with themselves and they can't be one person causing the struggle. It is how the other person might react or what they might say or how they say it or what they do when the conflict comes up that is also part of the conversation. It cannot be one or the other. Now, for that being said, the responsibility part is very hard for a lot of people, right? It's admitting, people think, oh, I'm admitting defeat. I got to win. It's people thinking, I didn't do anything wrong. Why should I give in? They have to be the one to give in. If only they give in, right? Like you said, Aaron, so great that if they just did it, I'll be fine. So it's really, that's not how healthy relationships work. If it's a business relationship, a friendship, or a romantic relationship, it takes responsibility to admit that you had a part in the equation. Now, you know, we have a couple of questions left. Don't want to hold you up too much. You guys are very busy people. What about the conflict itself, right? Pre-conflict, it could be resentment. It could be built up frustration. It could be all these things. We talk about the post, but what about when you're in it? What are some no-nos for arguing or even having a conflict or some successful ways to have a healthy conflict?
Yeah, great question. We have another chapter in the book, The Argument Hangover, about emotional triggers, the three steps to that. And not to go into detail about that, but essentially what you can do is when you're in the, actually think back to what typically triggers, like what sort of event, what sort of word or phrase triggers that emotion in yourself. And by noticing that, what you want to do is go back to those agreements then. So you want to then come up with an agreement and say, hey, Jocelyn, I realize like in those moments, what causes me just to feel like triggered and I get defensive is really when you or myself cuss or swear. So I would like to make an agreement that we don't swear or cuss no matter if we're triggered, no matter what's happening.
Yeah.
And is that an agreement that?
Absolutely.
So great. So now we do that when we're in a connected space. So to your point, that's kind of like a before strategy. Now when you're in it, I say, Jocelyn cusses at me. Then I say, hey, remember we have an agreement not to cuss.
Okay, you're right. Mm-hmm.
Now, why this works is they now remember that you both agreed to this some other time before. If I was try to force them in the moment, hey, don't cuss at me, that feels like you're trying to control them.
Mm.
So that only works if you make the agreement beforehand to where, again, it's more of a reminder to something that you did together rather than don't tell me what to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, because interestingly, and I'm sure people say you extract this from your conversations all the time, a lot of the disagreements get prolonged and escalated, not because they're still talking about the original topic, but because they're now talking about how they're fighting.
Always.
Right? And they're always now reacting to that. And so when you can be in the disagreement, tension is building, you're still feeling whatever you're feeling. If you can still honor your agreements, it will do less damage during, and therefore you're staying in more of a not logical, but you're staying present, less triggered, less reactive. And you're more so focusing on understanding, which there's of course skills on how to be a better listener.
Yeah, of course.
Communicate, because that's what really goes out. We stop listening to our partner.
And I think that you really touched home with a lot of people, myself included, that when we argue, it kind of gets into less about what the argument was because you kind of forgot about that or moved forward, but more about how you're saying it, what you're saying, what your body language is, nitpicking at all the little details of what someone might be doing and how they're doing it versus why we got into this argument to begin with and staying on topic. And that's one of the things I kind of promote as a therapist, is that it's okay to have arguments. It's okay to be frustrated. It's okay to have contention points and have conflict, but stay on the conflict. What truly, and then resolve that. Don't start going into, well, 3 weeks ago, you did X, Y, and Z that also bothered me. And then a month ago and 3 years ago, you also did three things that bothered me that are similar. And we never resolved it then, and we're going to resolve it now. That's not going to help. That's going to just continue the argument and make it deeper and more filled with unhealthy communication skills. Now, of course, everything in your book is accessible, right? And is so wonderful. And we'll talk about the book in a second. The hardest part, I think, for a lot of people is that sometimes books and seminars are great, but it's hard to kind of put that into practice because relationships are so built on emotion, right? There's so much emotion that's built in an argument or a conflict. They go like, screw the script, throw it out the window, we're going at it. And I think it's really important to have those conversations when you are good, when you're calm and collected to build a plan. Because if you try doing the plan in the middle of it all, it's going nowhere. And then people are like, why are you telling me what to do? Don't control me. So I really appreciate you coming on. I would love for you guys to kind of talk about your two books, The Power Couple and this new exciting book, The Argument Hangover, coming out next month. Can you tell us about it?
Well, I think we'll just keep the focus on The Argument Hangover because that's the one we're the most excited about. Wait. Yeah. So it's a book that gives, I love what you said. It's not just theories. We give step-by-step prompts, exercises, ways, you know, you don't want to sound the way you do want to sound. Because sometimes people are literally like, okay, I get the concept of being a better listener. How do I actually do that? So we give specific levels and ways of listening. So the book is designed to empower you with skills to fight smarter and communicate like pros, and to ultimately shorten the argument hangover period. Because again, that's what you want to focus on. How can we reconnect faster? Because that's going to keep our bond strong. It's going to keep the trust between us strong. And it will do less damage to us. So the book, and what I really think is great, is even if you pre-order it, because it is coming out February, we are providing $200 of pre-order bonuses. So you can get two free trainings on communication, conflict, emotional triggers, being a better listener. Like, we cover a lot in those two trainings, as well as a workbook to debrief after a disagreement. Mm. So you can claim those bonuses at theargumenthangover.com. So it's like well worth, like, even if you have to wait a couple of weeks before your book comes, to get those bonuses.
And that will be all in the show notes, of course. And like I talked to the Freemans beforehand, giveaway moment. So if you've listened to the episode and you're here right now, this is an opportunity for you to hear the giveaway for this amazing book. I, Ellie Weinstein, will buy you guys a book if you follow all of the accounts. I'll put them in the show note, myself, the Freemans, and subscribe to my podcast and rate it. And then if you send me a picture, DM me, email me on the show notes, you can get yourself a copy of this very, very important book. And I want to focus on what you said. It's about reconnecting fast, but it's also reconnecting well.
Yes.
Right? It's not, because sometimes speed is not always the answer. Just because, like you said before, Aaron, oh, we're good. Like, we're fine, you know, and avoid it. It's about reconnecting quickly but with good intention, with a healthy process and productive way. And that is
a true repair process.
Exactly. And that's the key, because the quicker it is with a right mindset and a right tactic is what keeps relationships longer. Because the longer you have it fester, the longer you don't get back together, the harder it is to reconnect and then repair. And that is where I'm hearing those five R's are so important. You know, can you tell everyone where you're at, how they can reach out to you, how they can get in touch with you? Because of course we can't get into everything that you guys do. You guys do so much. You know, this is your second book, hopefully two of many. I don't know. You hinted to other ones. Who knows? Who's the writer? Who's the better writer?
We both do it actually, and we really enjoy writing together.
Good for
it,
you.
It's challenging, but we do it. It's about 50-50.
I'm a terrible writer. I'm so afraid of writing a book. I cannot write for the life of me, which is why I create a podcast. I'm a better speaker.
I do have a tip that I shared this past week as well. I did a different way of writing this last time. Obviously, we have the ways that we come up with the content, turn it into chapters, paragraphs, and then both write. But I'm more naturally a speaker, right? Probably like you. So what I did was I recorded myself talking about that topic, and then I transcribed it and then went back and more so edited it. So I didn't just sit down and write. It was a much better way for me to also write in my own voice, because it was actually my voice, rather than when we sit down, we have our idea of what it sounds like, but you go back and like, oh, that didn't come out.
you gotta send me that style. I don't know if you used an app or something. I need to know about that, because I got, you know, I'm not the best writer. But I really thank you guys for coming on. Remember, the giveaway, a book of The Argument Hangover, can be yours if you just follow the rules. I'll post it when the episode comes out at the end of this month, beginning of February. So thank you so much, you guys. What website, what Instagram account, what's your stuff that people can reach you on?
So we're super social on Instagram. We're meet_thefreemans, M-E-E-T, the Freemans. So we're super social on there. We have a podcast as well, the Empowered Couples Podcast. And then our website is Meet the Freemans as well. And that links everything there.
Amazing. Okay. I hope everyone reaches out to them. They are really, truly great at what they do. They are experts in their field of relationships. And we live our lives based on relationships, and we need the help as best as we can, because we deal with it every day. I know it's kind of scary during COVID. We might not have those relationships as accessible, but it doesn't mean we can't work on them and learn how to better them when things get better, hopefully soon. So thank you so much for coming on, and I'll see everyone next time. Thank you for tuning into this week's Dude Therapist podcast episode, where we had Aaron and Jocelyn Freeman delve into their five R's of conflict, a little bit about their new book, The Argument Hangover, and what it means to have healthy communication in a modern day relationship. It was truly an honor to speak to these two. They were so pleasant and wonderful to meet and hopefully to continue to work with. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. And as if you listened, the giveaway is coming out to you. If you have listened to the podcast, follow their account, Meet the Freemans, follow my account, Elevation_Therapist, and The Dude Therapist. Go on iTunes, rate and review the podcast, and send me an email or DM me at thedudetherapist@gmail.com or at thedudetherapist on Instagram. And as always, any questions, concerns, ideas, collaborations, feel free to reach out to me as the same way. Email me at thedudetherapist@gmail.com or DM me at thedudetherapist. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. Don't forget to be kind to yourself and to others, and I'll see y'all next time. Thank you so much to listening to this week's episode of The Dude Therapist, and it only is happening because of you, the listeners, tuning in every week, even twice a week, to this show all about mental health, relationships, and wellness topics. And really, let's be honest, everything in between. And I'm so excited to show up every time and having great guests. So, thank you. And if you have any questions, concerns, ideas, collaborations, email me at thedudetherapist@gmail.com. Follow me on Instagram at thedudetherapist. Let me know what you're thinking. Let me know your ideas. I can't wait to hear from you. And if you can go along, subscribe, rate, review on all the streaming sites that you're listening on. I truly appreciate it because that's what makes this thing happen. So thanks for tuning in this week, and see you next time on the Dude Therapist podcast, because we've got more guests and more great content coming your way.